You don't want to take fair use to court because the courts usually side with the person making fair use. But and something else that we learned, and like we've said, is you can use the threat of court to shut someone up who doesn't have the money.
Hi, and welcome to the episode of CineNation. I am Brandon Sparks.
I'm Thomas Horton.
We're alone today. Ben Gertz, I think, is traveling to, or he's driving to Portland, is what it seems like. I don't know where he's at. Ben doesn't tell us everything now. Ben has his whole new life and everything, and he just doesn't care anymore. And Hunter's in Atlanta doing the Atlanta stuff. But yeah, so Thomas, also we just had our giveaway week this past week. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah.
Gave a lot of free stuff away that we're sending off to people this next week.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff going out to some solid fans.
Yeah, so, which is great. And a lot of great reaction from you guys. And hopefully some of these movies, we wanted to showcase a lot of smaller films if possible. I think we did that mostly. Our last day was Short Term 12 and Whiplash, and then we What We Do in the Shadows, which I know, Thomas, we're all big fans of on the show. So Thomas, what have you been watching?
I watched Preacher. You watched with
me.
I thoroughly enjoyed the pilot of Preacher, and I'm really excited for more. That's right up. If it has a very like a Matthew Vaughn feel to it, I think. With hyper violent in a comical way, which I really enjoy. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I thought the first episode was great. I love the cast. It's an amazing cast, and haven't read the books, but from what I understand, is a really really interesting book. So basically, it just boils down to like a really dark, comical take on the biblical apocalypse as seen through the eyes of a small town in Texas. The great, seriously great pilot episode directed by created and directed by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, his writing partner since high school. Yeah. And
it was very different for him.
Yeah,
like it was very different.
I think this is what they really wanted Green Hornet to be.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But this was definitely a much better execution of it overall. But I mean, these are guys. You know, I think a lot of times we pigeonhole people that make comedies into just being like bro comedy people.
Yeah.
I think Seth Rogen has been pigeonholed a lot more than his comedy partner James Franco, who we kind of let
flit around
from place to place. But I think this should be Seth Rogen's breakout, where we see that he's capable of more than just bro comedy. And I think that's also partly due to the fact that he hasn't like cast himself in this show, which I think is a solid choice because he doesn't really fit. I haven't heard him try to do a Southern accent. I don't imagine it would ever be great, but I don't think he would fit in this like small town Texas setting. That being said, most of the cast is from the UK somehow.
Yeah.
So props to everyone for pulling off convincing Texas accents for the most part.
Yeah, the first episode was just crazy. Like that first opening.
Yeah, the first 5 minutes.
If you're like trying to make
up your mind about the show, and you can watch the first 5 minutes, like if you don't like the first 5 minutes, go ahead and walk away. Like you're not going to enjoy the rest of the show. But if you like the first 5 minutes, it's going to be right up your alley.
Yeah, because it's just so random. But yeah, it's very different for him, and I'm glad to see he's expanding a little bit and not just doing the comedies. But I mean, he has Sausage Party coming out this year.
Yeah,
which will be interesting. And I think he's not a director for it, but he's a writer for it. And that looks, I'm actually kind of really excited for that one because it looks good. But yes, some stuff I've been watching. There's two things. I'll tell you the first thing. So, throwing back to our nostalgia episode many, many months back, Disney Channel started doing their original movies marathon.
Oh yeah,
this past weekend, and I started watching some, and man, some of these are really bad.
Oh yeah,
it's like some. I'm like, okay, that's really interesting. That's some interesting like shot choices. That there's some creativity behind it. But then some, I'm just like, man, how did this scene get past the writing stages? I watched, let's see, Alley Cat Strike with Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory when she was very, very young. A lot of random ones. Oh gosh. Double Team. Do you remember Double Team?
Oh yeah. Double Team was one of my favorites.
That's actually, I watched, I was like, okay, this is actually a pretty decently made one. Like there's some interesting shots, like shot choices and stuff like that. And then Can of Worms, another one I watched. This past weekend was like a Disney Channel reliving my childhood, and man, these parts are good, but man, some of these don't hold up that well.
It's really funny. I think I've talked about it on here before. I'm a huge fan of like the Honest Trailers YouTube channel, and they did one the other day in honor of the new Ninja Turtles movie, where they like went back through all the just awful Ninja Turtles property that's out there, including their like several concert movies where they like,
there were concert movies,
several of them.
What?
And they, yeah, it's bad, it's really bad. And then one of their gimmicks is they end the video with like a rewriting of the title of whatever they've been critiquing. And so their rewriting for this one was like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Your Childhood Has Always Sucked, You Just Didn't Realize It Until Now, or something like that. Like, definitely, it would be interesting to revisit our nostalgia episode after all this, like, Fuller House and all these things that came out, and we realized just how awful these things that we loved as kids were, and for some reason we've just, like, as a collective, agreed to, like, pretend that they're good because we were kids and we liked them, and it might somehow ruin our childhood to, like, admit that they were bad now.
Well, it's like there's some stuff, it's like there's some good stuff behind some of these things I've been watching, but it's like it's not masterpieces by any means. Mm-hmm. And now I'm currently like watching clips of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming out of the Shells tour. Like, oh my god. See, did Vanilla Ice perform on these? That's my big question.
No. This was at a point where they had sunken so low that even Vanilla Ice wouldn't participate.
Was it Cold as Ice? What was the movie he did like a while, long time ago?
Oh yeah, yeah. I never saw that.
I didn't see it either, but I just remember it was around. But man, he did a performance of the Ninja Rap recently because Stephen Amell from Era, who's in it, posted a video of it at a concert, and I'm just like, what the heck?
I just have to say, my favorite. I don't know Stephen Amell that well. I know that he's involved in wrestling and that he's involved in Arrow. But I just saw one of my favorite internet trolls I've ever seen in my life was recently Arrow had its like season finale, and everyone on the internet hated. Apparently, the show has just gone downhill. Uh-huh. And actually, on the Arrow subreddit, they just posted like F this. We're done with Arrow. Let's talk about a TV show that's actually good. Who wants to rewatch Daredevil on Netflix? Stephen Amell posted the other day. It was like, hey fans, I'm looking for a new name for a wrestling move I'm developing for the WWE. I can't tell you anything about the move. Just know it's going to be a finisher. Start giving me some good names. And somebody wrote, let's call it the Arrow season 3 finale, because it'll make anyone involved not want to participate anymore. And Stephen Amell just the guy's name was Tommy who wrote it, and Stephen Amell just commented back, Tommy, stop.
Oh god. Speaking of trolling, the other thing I've been watching, a lot of bad videos by this guy named Matt Haas.
Oh yeah.
Bold guy. This is to go with the topic that we're talking about today. Man, I know I'm a film student, and sometimes we can get very pretentious when watching other people's stuff. I'm like, oh, dude, like, what are you doing here? But some of the stuff is pretty bad. Like,
it's pretty bad. Is
it's like, and that's being, yeah, that's being very nice, like generous, but like the when they don't talk, it kind of works. That's the big thing. When they
when
don't
they're doing
talk,
parkour,
when they're doing parkour or just kind of looking, I'm like, okay, this is working. And then when they start talking, that's when it just like falls apart for me.
So Matt Haas is known by the YouTube name of Bold Guy. He's not really active right now. He was active in like 2012.
Yeah.
And he makes videos about picking up women.
Yep.
That are all scripted, written by him, in which he makes very lazy and often offensive pickup lines at very attractive actresses that he has hired to star in these movies or star in these videos, and just read these scripts that he's written in which he says extremely offensive things to them, and then they end up making out by the end of the video.
Yeah.
And sometimes he also fancies himself a parkour expert, so sometimes they do parkour in the videos.
Yeah.
And that's about the sum of his videos.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm looking at it, it's like everyone is like, Bold Guy meets this girl. Bold Guy picks up yoga girl.
Bold Guy picks up MILF is my favorite.
I haven't seen that one. Bold Guy picks up bisexual girl. And there's afterwards...
I'm sure that one's offensive.
And there's afterwards, there's pillow talk with bisexual girl. Like...
Oh, I've never watched any of those. Is that why it always says to be continued at the end of his videos?
Yeah, because they end up having sex is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's like...
And then they pillow talk. Okay.
Yeah,
maybe, you know, maybe I should give him a chance after I watch a pillow talking. Maybe he redeems himself. I'm just kidding. He definitely
it's like one shot above the bed, and it's just looking down. It's like, yeah, it was great. Like, that's kind of like what's going on. There's Bold Guy versus Vampire Girl. And there's the pillow talk episode afterwards. I love at one point, I think I was reading like how all the actresses of certain characters change. And I think it's just because they get tired of acting with them. That's what the feeling I have.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Brandon, you and I know, like, we work with a lot of up-and-coming actors who are trying to make it out here. And it's hard.
Yeah, it is.
It's extremely hard to be an actor. And I have so much respect for anyone who keeps at it in the acting industry. But... like, what do you stand to gain from doing one of his videos? It's just, it feels so, it feels like he's, you know, just exploiting these people. And, anyway, so.
Is he in LA or is he elsewhere? I don't know.
I don't.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay. So talk about why we're talking about him, why he is a topical thing.
In the past 2 weeks, Matt Haas, a.k.a. Bold Guy, has also become a.k.a. the most hated man on the internet because he took on an internet superstar, probably one of the biggest channels on YouTube right now, also one of the biggest like comedy forces on Reddit right now. They just have a huge following, which is the husband and wife team of Etha and Elon Klein. I just totally pronounced their name wrong. Ethan and Ela Klein. And they go by the name of H3H3 Productions on YouTube. And they are... they're commenters, they're parody commenters on just all the crazy stuff that's on YouTube. Sometimes they'll do these reaction videos where they'll watch a YouTube video and talk about it. Other times they do these skits where they... just kind of parody. They'll act out a short film where they parody something else that's been on YouTube. But it's really, really, really funny stuff. My roommate and I got into it about 2 months ago, and we watch all their videos. It's really sharp parody. It's a lot of fun, and it's just they're a great kind of medium because I for one haven't when YouTube first started up, I was big into like the YouTube community. I treated YouTube like a social network, and I had friends who were, I was making videos, and I had friends who were making videos in other states, and we would, you know, keep up with each other through it, and I knew the superstars, and I had, you know, I was a fan of people, and I've since long gotten out of it, and the culture has definitely changed, but it's still there where these people build these gigantic followings and these trends take off. And so Ethan and Ela are really a great voice of humor and parody and like normality almost for anyone who is familiar with the YouTube community or is just kind of interested in it. They're great to check out. So one of their reaction videos, which they posted on their smaller channel, not H3H3 Productions, but a channel called Ethan and Ela, where they do casual reaction videos, was a reaction video to Bold Guy Picks Up Parkour Girl. And they do what they always do. They just kind of make jokes about the whole video, show a couple little clips from it, and they were hit about... soon after posting, they were in contact with Matt Haas's lawyer, who ordered them to take it down or he would sue them. They refused because they believe they were under fair use coverage, which we'll get more into fair use. But he responded with pretty much blackmail, like, give us $4,000, make a video in which you apologize to Bold Guy and talk about how cool he is. Or we're going to sue you. And they again refused, and then they got sued. And, I mean, I think this is a good time to talk about fair use, because this goes into the problem that they faced immediately upon being sued, is that fair use is out there. There are legal precedents for fair use. But fair use is not legally defined in very clear terms, to the point where you cannot refute fair use outside of court. You can't, if somebody brings a lawsuit against you and you say this is easily fair use, you cannot shoot down that lawsuit without going to a full trial, because fair use is something as it stands right now that has to be debated in front of in front of a jury. So the thing with Bold Guy is, by suing H3H3, even if they do fall under fair use, which, to be quite honest, the courts are pretty, for the most part, the courts usually tend to lean towards the speaker, the person who's claiming fair use, for the most part. The courts are, but that doesn't change the fact that you still have to go to court, which could take like 2 years and up to $100,000 in legal fees to battle something which you and everyone else knows is protected under fair use. And I mean, fair use just boils down to, like, you're using something. Usually parody is the best choice, is the best way to there's several different defenses to fair use. Parody, only using it for, you know, a short amount of time, like a 30-second spurt of something. Educational purposes can be fair use. But I mean, obviously the big thing for H3H3 is parody. So
and the big issue that they bring up is that, or that Bold Guy and his lawyers bring up, is that H3H3 used the entire video almost of the Bold Guy versus Parkour. I don't know. I think it was 3 minutes or so. I'm not entirely sure. It was a good, I mean, it was a good chunk, but, that's what they're saying, is that by doing that, it defaced Bold Guy's name and it affected his channel and his popularity. And that they also, because they used the thumbnail saying that basically they tricked viewers into thinking that the video they were releasing dealt with Bold Guy, like it was a Bold Guy video, but it was actually just theirs, and they were trying to ride off his coattails to get views, is basically what they were saying. And that's why one reason why they're suing is because they believed it defaced him and stole his fans away from him and hurt his overall, like, I guess income in a way,
you can monetize
These videos.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, is that you know, lawsuits and copyright and that sort of thing have become a lot more contentious You know, back when I was using YouTube, you could upload whatever you wanted because nobody was making money off of it, so it didn't really matter. But now that people are profiting off of it, it is a bigger deal. But I'll tell you, look, based off of the charges that you just kind of read out, the bold guy is alleging, you know, there is a major, major legal precedent that makes me not worried at all for Ethan and Ela, you know, once they get into court. The issue here is more of the just huge inconvenience that's being inflicted upon them. And I'm almost positive that the lawyers for Matt Haas know this, you know that they're not going to win, but he seems, at this point, he just seems so petty that he's just trying to, you know, inflict this, you know, years and money. But a huge precedent for fair use, and something that I think will definitely come up in this trial, would be Campbell versus Rose Acuff, which is that's the Supreme Court title for it. It's more commonly known as Two Live Crew versus Roy Orbison.
Yep.
In which the kind of joke rap group Two Live Crew was sued for using the riff from Pretty Woman.
Yeah.
For their song "Oh Pretty Woman," and it's along the same lines. You know, you were talking about that it by using a lot of the similar elements that Bold Guy was saying, it defaced his property. Mm-hmm. You know, this for Two Live Crew, they use the same riff, they use the same title. So Roy Orbison,
even the same chorus, I think, are pretty close.
Well, that's the thing. The first time the chorus goes around, it's "Oh Pretty Woman," but then the problem about defacing that Roy Orbison's representation brought up was that the rest of the song, the chorus turns into "Big Hairy Woman," and it's talking about an extremely unattractive woman. So they were worried that, you know, it was going to have a negative effect on the Roy Orbison song. But the Supreme Court, in that case, the Supreme Court ruled that the song counted as parody. And, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. It's about a big hairy woman. And that the fact... So then the argument was brought up, once it was ruled as parody, the argument was brought up that it was parody that Two Live Crew profited off of. So then it shouldn't be under fair use if you profit it. And so the big standard from that case was that they said that you can profit off of parody, and as long as it's a clear parody, you know, as long as you're using something and you're clearly twisting it for humor, which has since, I mean, been parody, you know, that was early 90s that happened. That was like 94. I mean, if you think of all the in the early 2000s, the Wayans Brothers movies that all spawned, or all the scary movies and all the parody movies that spawned off of that.
50 Shades of Black was the most recent
one. And Date Movie and Epic Movie and literally those. Everything. Yeah. All of those are protected under that legal precedent that you can profit off of a parody as long as it's an open parody.
And the thing with the Two Live Crew was what helped them, because usually they say, like, don't take the most recognizable chunk of it and put it in your parody. But Two Live Crew did the most recognizable part, is the riff. And then also the "Oh Pretty Woman," and because their song was basically a complete 180 is why it worked, because they were able to take the most recognizable thing, but then putting it on its head, and that's why it was labeled parody. This never became a case because these lawyers were smart. When "Escape from Tomorrow," the Disneyland, Disneyland Disney World, where they. This director that I forget his name, but he did a guerrilla style filmmaking at Disneyland Disney World, where he made essentially a horror film at these places, and Disney actually never sued them, and there was two reasons for that, and that was because, or what I've heard and read, was that Disney didn't want to give that movie any more like notice,
right?
Because if they sued them, it would become so big, and they knew they couldn't really control how it was seen. And the other problem is that they hired a very good lawyer for Escape from Tomorrow, and basically they were going to argue parody, because they were saying they were taking the happiest place on Earth and essentially making it the scariest place on Earth. And it was switching it, taking the most recognizable part of that and turning around completely.
Yep.
So yeah, but tell, why is it a big deal that this case is going on right now? Like, what?
Well, this is the first time that this sort of, as I've said, you know, it's happened in music, it's happened in film. This yeah. is the first time that somebody's like really fought over YouTube property.
Yeah.
YouTube's gotten pretty strict about copyrights in a way that most people argue is not user-friendly. It's usually corporation-friendly. Because if a corporation calls a claim on any intellectual property on YouTube, YouTube will automatically take it down and flag... YouTube has a three-strike system, and they will flag the user with a strike in a way that is sometimes not fair. I mean, there are, you know, billions of videos on YouTube, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of copyright infringement, but sometimes, and you can't necessarily blame YouTube for having a blanket copyright policy, but sometimes yeah. it happens by not evaluating these copyright claims. Sometimes it happens that people are really penalized for things that they shouldn't be. I think mm-hmm. the biggest example of late was the user who had his property stolen by Family Guy. Family Guy used video game footage that a YouTube user had uploaded
mm-hmm.
and then turned around and claimed copyright on his footage because they had used it on their show, and had his mm-hmm. footage taken down and him penalized by YouTube after they had stolen footage from him.
Wow.
And so that's one of the biggest ones of late that has made a lot of people on YouTube really unhappy with the way they're being treated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it also doesn't... So I think a big thing here is YouTube as a corporation being mm-hmm. involved in this whole process, because YouTube did take down... When Bold Guy first claimed copyright infringement by H3H3, YouTube took it down forcefully and mm-hmm. inflicted a strike on... actually what happened was H3H3 yeah. took it down and yeah. they made it private so no one could see it, and YouTube still enacted a strike on them after the fact.
Well, what I heard H3H3 say in their video was that basically Bold Guy allegedly came in and when it was unlisted and basically made a copyright claim like that to mm-hmm. basically, they were getting a strike when it wasn't even viewable
yeah.
online.
Yeah.
And him or his lawyers or whoever made that claim when it wasn't even being seen, and in turn affected them by giving them a strike when it wasn't even being shown.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I think that's, if there's two big reasons why, and we haven't really touched on this, but everyone in the internet community has rallied behind H3H3. Yeah. They yeah. made a video when they were served the official lawsuit. They made a video in which they just stated, you know, this is happening. We have, right now, they have free legal representation from a lawyer who calls himself the video game lawyer. Mm-hmm. He's been offering them free legal representation for now, but they did say, you know, we are moving forward. We might lose our entertainment empire that we've built. They didn't call it that, but I mean, that's what they have built.
Yeah, yeah.
And we might lose all our videos, we might lose all the money that we've made, and we might be involved in this, you know, up to 2-year legal battle facing hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. And didn't ask for money or anything, but someone else, a guy who has, I mentioned that I was big into the YouTube community in my like middle school years, mm-hmm. a guy, Phil, who was one of the first YouTube stars, started a GoFundMe campaign for them to start raising mm-hmm. their legal fees. And they did. They raised well over $100,000 to help cover their legal fees, including pretty much anyone who is a big name on YouTube, including yeah. a lot of people that H3H3 has made fun of in the past.
Yeah.
Especially there's one user named Leafy that has had a very contentious past with H3H3. He made a video about this, making fun of this man with autism, that ended up going viral and earning a lot of like mocking and actually some violent threats against the man with autism. Mm-hmm. H3H3 made a reaction video sticking up for this man and calling Leafy out for his for internet bullying. Mm-hmm. And they've been going back and forth for a couple of months now over this. And Leafy turned around and gave a lot of money to help with their legal funds. So it's mm-hmm. Bold Guy has the power of uniting people that hate each other against him on the internet. But I think the reason that this has struck such a big chord with the internet and with YouTube users is twofold. It's one that fair use laws are, I mean, there is legal protection for fair use laws, but mm-hmm. they are not geared towards protecting the little man, you know? It's set up for these corporations to fight out long legal battles, and it's still pretty obvious that, you know, like in the case of Disney and Escape from Tomorrow, if Disney had decided to take them to court, they could have totally bankrupted them.
Yeah, they could have.
And so that's
that's the thing is that the little guy might have a claim, might be fair use, but the problem is that it could last year, 2 years, and draining this little guy into hundreds of thousands of dollars that they do not have.
Right. So I think the hope in this case is that it will change the legal precedent in a way that it's more geared towards, because I think a lot of times because the big legal precedent cases have been kind of corporation against corporation, like Two Live Crew's recording company versus Roy Orbison's recording company.
Yeah.
And I think the hope is that this will set a legal precedent in which it protects, because most of the time I feel like fair use is a at this point in technology, fair use is an internet user using media that is in a fair way, but it's probably owned by a corporation.
Yeah.
And so they're hoping that legal precedent will evolve to protect that small user. And then the other side of the coin, and the reason all these YouTube people are getting involved, is because this whole ordeal has made it obvious that there needs to be changes to YouTube's process mm-hmm. of handling copyright claims. And so the hope is that by coming out in support of H3H3, making this a high-profile case, we can affect both the legal precedent and the YouTube standards for copyright claims.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, I don't think you mentioned it, but what do you think would happen if, for some reason, they did lose? How would that change YouTube and...
Oh, if they lost, most of YouTube would be susceptible to claims right now. That's the thing about these reaction videos, is this is what's hot on YouTube right now. H3H3 is not the only person doing this.
No.
They are doing it in a way that almost parodies the other reaction videos,
mm-hmm.
but everyone is doing reaction videos. And that is... You know, YouTube has these trends that rise and fall, and that is the trend right now, is watching other people's YouTube videos, watching, you know, bad movies, watching TV shows, and showing the content as you show your own reactions to it. Mm-hmm. Trailer reactions, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. And so nothing legal, other than these YouTube copyright claims, nothing has gone to court over this. And so that's why... a lot of people are hoping for a positive legal precedent to be set, but they're also hoping to not have a negative legal precedent set, because if what H3H3 did is not ruled fair use, mm-hmm. most of YouTube right now is open to some pretty heavy lawsuits. So mm-hmm. It would just open the floodgates of lawsuits if this precedent is set for Bold Guy.
I mean... Yeah, and I mean, because with these guys, H3H3, they're looking at, I mean, they average just on their first page, like, over 2 million views per video.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are a very large, channel.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if they did lose, it would essentially, even if they didn't lose, if they didn't have the money backed by GoFundMe, it was a possibility that they would lose their entire channel in the way, or their entire following,
mm-hmm.
and it would affect all of that. But yeah, so I guess here, now what happens to Bold Guy, do you think, once, like, if he loses this case? I mean, because this guy isn't as active. That's the interesting part, is that he's not a it feels like he's just trying to piggyback off of these people, in a way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what his monetary situation is. He has turned into an internet villain in the last couple weeks, but he was not very prominent beforehand, which is the thing. He had not been active on YouTube for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has brought him back to prominence. It's probably jacking up his views, but I don't know, you know, how much money he's dropping on this. He's obviously susceptible to the same legal fees as anyone else, but if this is ruled for H3H3, he won't lose. That's the thing, is he won't lose his channel. He just has to, you know, he just has to man up and bear the fact that a lot of people on the internet are making fun of him for these ridiculous videos that he's uploaded.
Yeah, because I'm looking at his channel right now, and the only video that has on its top page that has over 1 million views, that's been released in the past 2 years, has been the bald guy picks up girl doing parkour.
Yeah, and that's those views are because of H3H3.
Yeah, let me see. It's those like him. Bald guy versus parkour girl has 10.7 million views. His most is bald guy versus dance girl, which is also not actually that one's one of the better ones because they don't actually talk until the very end. That's why that one kind of works. But yeah, it's always like all the top ones are bald guy picks up this person.
It reminds me so much. I've been rewatching the last season of South Park, which is hands down the greatest season of South Park I think that they've ever done. And I firmly believe that if everyone in the country watched this last season of South Park, we'd be in a better place politically and socially. And that I totally seriously mean that. But there's one episode where Cartman posts a picture of himself with his shirt off on Twitter, and with the caption "Don't I look buff?" And everybody starts writing back like, "No, you don't look buff." And he gets really upset about it, and he starts talking about like how mean the internet is, and everybody, like, these people are trying to suggest, like, well, maybe, you know, don't post a picture of yourself shirtless on Twitter, and he's like, no, it's my right, Twitter should be a safe space. And he ends up hiring somebody to go through his Twitter and only show him the positive comments whenever he uploads a picture of himself. He only wants to see the positive comments. And that's what this whole bold guy thing reminds me of so much, is he's posted these videos in which he just makes himself look like the coolest guy, or what his idea of the coolest guy in the world is. And now that someone has responded negatively to it, he wants it like taken down from the internet. It's just so funny to me. And this past season of South Park is full of these. It's almost as if these guys are, it's almost as if these guys are, you know, psychic, that they've predicted, because a lot of these episodes that they've done were kind of relevant at the time and now are even more relevant.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty, I highly recommend people to go watch that. But
and that's becoming a lot of, I think, animated comedy in a way, is that they're becoming more relevant over time. I don't watch The Simpsons, but I know like Simpsons tends to like sometimes predict things to happen before they actually happen, like the whole Trump announcing presidency, and it's like actually in the episode him coming down an escalator, like coming to announce Trump running for president. But then also too, I'm looking at Bold Guy, he actually charges per certain videos. I don't know if you saw this.
Charges to watch video?
Charges to watch.
Oh,
them.
like YouTube Red?
Yeah, it's like it's 50 cents for like these. There's Bold Guy Picks Up Yoga Girl, complete and uncut. That's one.
What, is that supposed to be, like, porn or something?
I don't know. And then it's Horny Tony versus Call Girl, complete and uncut, also 50 cents. Yeah, and these are very misogynistic videos. Like, that's one thing I don't think we mentioned, is that these are very, very terrible. Again, they are kind of well-made. But like it's just they're so bad towards the, like, especially the women that are being put in this
it's
in these movies,
highly misogynistic.
I'm looking at one right now. I don't know what the video is about, but I'm looking at, this goes into a recent topic that's been happening. It's the guy pointing a gun at a girl. It's bold guy pointing a gun at a girl who's been in a couple of his videos. Ugh. And I don't know what the video is about, but it's a very weird thing, and that goes with the topic of with the whole X-Men Apocalypse stuff recently about Apocalypse choking Jennifer Lawrence, and that's been their main way of promoting it.
Yeah.
And that's caused a big stir. But it's still this is a guy holding a gun to a woman's face, which is, it feels weird to me. I don't know.
Well, and it's just really poor, I don't know. I feel like I'm just making an assumption. I don't have any numbers on this, but judging from the way that I use YouTube in the past, I feel like most of the audience for YouTube is middle to high school boys.
Yeah.
For most of the audience that comes back to it on a daily basis and I did, had people they followed. And what Bold Guy is teaching them is to just be extremely abrasive, and he teaches cutting down, he teaches using negative comments to cut women down. He teaches bothering women when they ask you to stop talking to them.
Yeah.
And the lesson of all these videos is if you keep bothering women with overtly sexual and negative comments, that they'll eventually just magically be sexually attracted to you.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that H3H3 is on a crusade to take down this person who's distributing negative things, but obviously this is a person who is rife for parody and in need of parody. And and I think it's just very saying to his character that he has turned around and responded in such a way to the parody.
Because in all honesty, this is not the only guy that does videos like this on YouTube. That's the thing. I figure he's not the only one. But it's these are the people that, this guy has somewhat of a following. That's kind of what I don't like, is that this guy who's teaching this stuff or preaching these things in a way has a decent following. He's averaging mostly, 100, depending on what it is, 100 to 500,000 views. But in the case of him picking up the girls, which are the ones that's B is mean and sexual as possible to them, they have over 1 million views. And I'm looking at, now most of them probably don't have a lot of likes. That's the thing, is that half the people who are, there's more thumbs down on some of these videos than there are thumbs up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, it's a problem.
Yeah. So what has happened as of recent, after raising more than enough to cover their legal fees, H3H3 has made a response video in which they thanked everyone. Ethan actually ended up taking down his rant against Leafy and making a video in which he explained why and that they had spoken outside of YouTube videos and decided that it's time for them to put aside that and come together against the real problems, which is, these copyright infringement lawsuits and all this.
Yeah.
And they have announced that instead of taking all the money, especially since it's way too much now, it's way much more than they're going to need for their legal fees, they've created an escrow account to be maintained by the video game lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically money for him to continue offering free legal counsel to YouTubers who are being wrongly accused of copyright infringement and who have fair use defenses, but who need the money to and the legal counsel to fight, and so they're going to use whatever amount of funds they need out of that escrow account to cover their own trial, and then that account will continue on. It will also continue on, as an open donation opportunity, and it will continue on as a foundation to help support anyone who is being wrongfully accused of copyright infringement.
Mm-hmm. And as of right now, it has 167,000. And I wonder how much it'll go up if this continues to get... because they're talking about that a lot of these YouTube people are donating a lot of money. And if they somehow, because I know Philip, is it DeFranco?
Yeah,
is that his name? Because mm-hmm. I know he's been talking about it on his channel a good bit. So I mean, if their following start donating stuff, I mean, it could get even bigger. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long the GoFundMe lasts, but yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it'll, at this point now they've got something set up, I think that they will continue to take, you know, it'll be something, I think, from now on that you can continue to donate money to mm-hmm. once they have the escrow set up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's been lovingly named the Fair Use Protection Act?
Yeah.
Which is an inside joke for H3H3 fans, FUPA, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is what Ethan lovingly refers to his beer belly as. but they, yeah. it, you know, they're just, I think from watching a lot of their videos, they Ethan and Ela both seem like really great people, and the fact that they have taken this all in stride, and the fact that the internet has just united in support. The night that the yep. news came out about mm-hmm. their lawsuit, I was feeling really disheartened because Euthon and I really didn't have an idea of how big of a network they had amassed of fans and friends. And yep. Euthon and I actually watched their video where they announced they were being sued and they didn't have the money to cover it and all this stuff. And I got on Twitter that night and just... not even related to like their account, you know, I wasn't seeing this through retweets, I was just seeing the people that I follow on Twitter, everyone just coming out for, you know, cartoonists that I follow, showrunners, actors, just it blew up, it was huge, and mm-hmm. I realized a lot of people watch these videos a lot more than I expected, but also mm-hmm. it's something that appeals to anyone who is familiar with videos and YouTube and the way that the copyright system is somewhat broken these days.
Yeah. And their biggest video is that you introduced me. This is the first time I heard about them was a video you showed me, and that was Vape Nation.
Vape Nation!
And the funny thing is that I was on, like, because it's very popular because, I mean, I remember recently I was like on a tour with some Alabama students that I was talking with or whatever, and I remember people were quoting Vape Nation. I'm just like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was watching Kimmel not too long ago, and the band Walk the Moon was on, and uh-huh. and one of the band members flashed the Vape Nation hand sign for it before they cut out to commercial.
Oh man. But I mean, and that's their most popular video, but I mean they I'm interested to see how long this takes. So because this, you were saying earlier, because this claim has been made, they have to go to trial because of it. Mm-hmm. So Matt Haas can't technically drop the...
I mean, they could settle out of court, but that would, you know, that would
kind no, of... I don't see them selling out of court at this moment in time.
But that would kind of ruin all this energy that's been gained about trying to set a legal precedent and make mm-hmm. making changes. But I mean, yes, Matt Haas could drop this at any point. Judging from the character he has shown himself to be in the past, I don't see that as being any likelihood. Mm-hmm. I think he might be one of those people that is now feeding off of this negative, you know, it's attention.
Attention,
you know?
Yeah, it's attention.
No news is bad news, but yeah, it'll be really interesting to see moving forward, and I have a lot of confidence. I don't want to jinx anything, but I have a lot of confidence that it'll work positively. I think mm-hmm. I think the main issue here was being penalized by YouTube, and not having the money to incur the legal proceedings. But when I studied media law in school, it was kind of a general rule of thumb that you didn't, if you were a corporation, for the most part, you don't want to take fair use to court because the courts usually side with the person making fair use.
Yeah.
But something else that we learned, and like we've said, is you can use the threat of court to shut someone up who doesn't have the money.
Yeah, I mean, that happened, I don't know how you can say this, but like I remember back in, I don't know where it was at, but when Disney sued that daycare for copyright infringement because they painted Disney characters on their wall. Do you remember that?
I know a lot of daycares that have Disney characters painted.
Yeah, so essentially this, and I can tell you an Alabama story on top of that, but yeah, they had sued this daycare, and basically, I think they had to drop it, they settled or whatever, they repainted it, and I think, like, Warner Brothers came in and painted Bugs Bunny and stuff on the wall for them. And another one, this happened in my hometown in Tuscaloosa, the University of Alabama sued this bakery. This woman made cookies, and she made cookies with the Alabama A on it. And the college actually sued her for copyright infringement because they were using the A. And I can't remember exactly what happened. I think they ended up, like, I think it was someone that was, like, going through it, like, oh, we can sue this person for this. And then when it got so much backlash, like, oh, we can let her make cookies with the Alabama A on it, because that'll just hurt us. That'll hurt us.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. A lot of times, these lawsuits aren't going to look good. It's going to make you the big, bad corporation. And there's a pretty fair chance that you would lose. But when they do these things, they're counting on, not the defendant not making it far enough to get a legal decision.
Yeah, yeah. But I think we covered a lot with this topic.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you. So when you were a YouTube celebrity, like, what all did you talk about, Thomas?
I was never a YouTube celebrity. I made some fairly successful for YouTube at that point. Like, if you hit 1,000 views on YouTube at that time, it was like, you were a god. But I had some friends that we all kind of started out at the same time, and YouTube. This sounds weird, but at that point, there was so little original content on YouTube. So much of YouTube was uploading of
cat videos,
TV clips, and things from E-Bomb's world. there were so few people making original content for YouTube that I got. We kind of found each other, and a lot of a lot of them ended up doing a lot better than me. I was kind of the lesser child of the whole gang, but they still, it was a very great community, and they still communicated with me a good bit, and some of them went on to fame, some of them disappeared. Some of them are still going. Smosh was one of the big ones that was rising up when I was on YouTube, and they're still at it like 10 years later. But
those are the guys, they do stuff for movies and stuff, right?
Yeah, they run several large websites now.
Yeah.
They did some kind of prank with
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, and those guys.
They've done a couple of that stuff. I think they even did stuff with Emma Watson, a lot of different.
I think they're actually in the Angry Birds movie.
Are they really?
Yeah. I saw something about that.
Thomas, this could have been you.
Yeah.
Like, why?
If I had kept at it. I was in middle school. I wasn't as prolific as a lot of these. A lot of them were like, had dropped out of high school to pursue YouTube stuff.
I mean, when you're in middle school, what do you talk about on YouTube?
I mean, I didn't talk. I made comedy videos. Okay. Yeah, comedy shorts.
Okay.
Because
I'm as a middle school guy, it's like you're just reacting to your day.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't doing like video logs or. reaction videos or anything. I was, and that's the thing, was
making stuff.
At that point, nobody was doing video logs or reaction videos.
Yeah,
you didn't put yourself, like, you didn't sit in front of a webcam and talk on YouTube. You did shorts, you did narrative shorts, parody shorts, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Well, are any of your videos still online? That's the big question.
A lot of them are down because of copyright. I just used whatever music I wanted to, so a lot of them. I know that there's actually one, I think, that you can watch the video, but they muted the whole audio track.
I have a couple of those.
Yeah. Most of them are gone now. I can, and that's the way YouTube works. Is a lot they'll do what's called shadow banning, where when I log on, it still looks like they're there, but if somebody else tries to watch them, they just don't show up.
Yeah.
But a couple of them are still there. I had probably one of my most successful videos. I used a Buck Cherry song, and for some reason, the recording company,
For Buck Cherry.
2005, can you get? for some reason, the recording company agreed to let me use it, whenever all these copyright things ended up showing up, I wasn't even paying attention to it at that point, but I looked back at some point and they had agreed to let me continue using the song, so that one's still up. Mm-hmm. They're all awful. I mean, they're all terrible. But I think at that point we were all making terrible things, and we were just, everybody was supporting each other.
All right, you can go find my terrible videos on YouTube as well that have also been muted or been taken down for copyright infringement.
Yep.
But yeah, so to end it, what's some recommendations you have for people to go watch or read or listen to?
Gotta be Coloring Book. I'm still listening to Coloring Book on like a daily basis. It's been out for 3 weeks now.
Same.
Coloring Book, if you don't know, is a mixtape by Chance the Rapper, who is one of Kanye's proteges. Chance was actually I had mixed emotions on Life of Pablo, Kanye's last album. Some good songs, some really not great songs at all. And I found out during some interviews for Coloring Book, I found out that Chance the Rapper actually was responsible for literally every song that I like off of Life of Pablo. and one of the things, I think Life of Pablo, as Kanye was shopping it around, Kanye kept saying it was a gospel album. It's a gospel album. And there's like two tracks on Life of Pablo that follow that. And then at some point, Chance was, when he was talking about Coloring Book, he said, you know, it's a gospel album, and it is. Like, every sample is a loop of a gospel choir. He has one song where he heavily samples the spiritual How Great Is Our God, which is a great song. Yeah, it really, as a mixtape, it all holds together really well. It follows the same themes.
Yeah, it does.
Really interesting songs, some good earworms that'll get stuck in your head. And I'm all about it. I listen to it constantly and continue to find really interesting new things in it. So huge fan. Check that out if you're just a fan of music. I mean, not even, I think this is something that tends to transcend the genre, and it's just something you should check out if you like music.
I would agree. For me to watch, it was actually a recommendation from you that I started watching, and it's Broadchurch. I haven't seen season 2 yet, but season 1 I loved and thought was great. And so it's a great little BBC show that was, they take their time with it. That's the thing the BBC does. They take their time with their shows, because they're making a series 3 coming up soon, apparently. I think they're filming it. Basically, it's a mystery show that's set in like a small British like island town, in a way. Is it island or like beach town?
Yeah.
And it's David Tennant, Olivia Colman, and it starts off with this boy has died. It first looks like a suicide, and then it's a murder, and then David Tennant and Olivia Colman have to find out who has killed this young boy. And it's a great mystery. Like, it's a great show, great writing, great acting. I'm interested to see season 2 when I can get to it, and then series 3 as well. And they may I didn't see it, I think you might have, the US version.
Yeah, I mean, it was solid as far as remakes of British TV shows go, which tend to be awful. But but this one was, it worked as its own show. It wasn't as good, but I think bringing David Tennant over was a very, very solid choice, because David Tennant is incredible in that show. It's one of those things where I would hope that it would bring people who watched it in America over to the British show. I still recommend the British program over the American one, but still pretty surprisingly good for an American remake of a British TV show.
Because it's not the, what was the In-Betweeners? Is that the one you...
In-Betweeners, Skins. Ugh. There was a rumor for a while that they were going to remake Spy, which was a really good British sitcom with Rob Corddry. They were going to remake it here with Rob Corddry, and I think it disappeared for good. But
He's off doing Ballers. He's okay.
I mean, it's not like I mean, I'm not in support of people remaking foreign films either, for the most part. But it's not even with British TV show. It's not like you have to remake it because people don't want to read the subtitles. Like, they're speaking English. Just watch the British show.
Oh gosh. But no, it's a good series to check out if you have the time. I got it from Cinephile, local Cinephile in West Los Angeles. But yeah, and so also, to end the show, make sure you subscribe on iTunes. Give us any feedback. We will definitely read it. Any ratings, it helps us out tremendously to make the show better. And then also follow us on Medium. I know Thomas just had his big Medium hit.
I wrote a really snarky James Bond article just for fun, and people seemed to like it, so it kind of did well.
Yeah, it did well. And we have a couple more great ones, or good ones, that have been out recently. Will Clayton's put up a couple of reviews. Sean Randall, who I went to school with, in Alabama, put up something recently. A lot of great stuff. Check it out. And if you want to be a writer, just get a Medium account. Send us the link to your article, and we'll read it, and then hopefully we can publish it. We're looking for more stuff every week, because we want to gain it's a good publication. I love going through it and reading the stuff that you guys send.
It's, you know, Medium is something I feel like was kind of still struggling to find its form when we came to it. And without building us up too much, I would say that we have definitely solidified ourselves as being a large publication on Medium. Like, we contribute, we have a lot of really good entertainment writers from Medium, and and we are publishing a lot of really good stuff.
And also we try to keep you guys updated on there with the podcast, and update you with things that are going on in the movie world, movies that are coming out, but also revisiting other movies as well. And hopefully I've been talking with a few more writers to get them involved. So we got some good stuff on the way with that. And also follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. We also have Flipboard, another thing we do. But yeah, just do all that, and make sure you go watch Thomas's videos on YouTube from when he was in middle school.
Please don't.
We'll put the link in the show notes. But yeah, thank you guys for listening, and hope you continue to listen to more episodes. Bye.
Bye.